Now, that's almost the end of this month's podcast, and we've heard a lot about the microbial analysis taking place at Diamond. But a key point about Diamond is its versatility across all fields of science. One recent and fast-developing area of chemistry is the design and use of metal organic frameworks. They have potential uses in gas storage and catalysis, but can also provide greater insight into the fundamental workings of chemical reactions, as Nottingham University's Neil Champness explains.
So a metal organic framework is a material, always a solid, which is made by reacting metals with organic molecules, which will act as a bridge between different metal centres. So you react the two together and you make a three-dimensional structure. So it'll look a bit like a climbing frame. And typically they will have holes within that structure. But more importantly beyond that, metal organic frameworks are just this subset of materials where you can, well, react metals and ligands.
So essentially it's a three-dimensional porous structure that you can kind of encapsulate things into maybe, but on a very, very small scale.
Yes, absolutely. So the types of sort of dimensions that we're talking about will be sort of 2 nanometers and below, but that is the molecular scale.
What would you say the kind of general aims of these structures are and the general kind of purpose of them?
The beauty of metal organic frameworks is that you can vary the metal that you use. So typically we use transition metals, so things like copper and zinc and things like that. Or you can use lanthanides. Okay, so there's a lot of variation there, and they have different properties that they bring with them. But also you can vary the organic molecule a lot as well. And therefore you have an almost sort of limitless library of possible framework structures. A lot of the work is directed towards gas storage. That is a big theme. Our own research group work with Diamond, in fact, on developing hydrogen storage materials. You can use it for trapping carbon dioxide is another possible direction. There is a lot of interest in developing them for pollutant separation, those types of things.
So essentially, you can really just design and tailor these to be specific to the kind of use or the things that you want to look into, really.
Absolutely. I mean, that's the kind of the great desire. And in many ways, that is more true for metal organic frameworks than it is for anything else.
Tell me more about your specific use, then, of these structures, because you look into photochemical and photophysical reactions, so reactions that really need the presence of light.
Yes. One of the interesting things in photochemistry is that you can shine light on a molecule and it becomes excited. It absorbs the light and it becomes excited. And those excited states then undergo different reactions or use that energy, the energy of the excited state, in different ways. The actual properties of those excited states depend very much upon the environment in which they're sitting, and also how easily they can meet other excited states, other excited molecules, and react with them. What we have been doing is trying to incorporate those molecules which can be photoexcited within the metal organic framework. You are controlling the environment of the excited state, of that excited molecule, and also you're stopping it meeting other molecules, and therefore you're changing the properties of the molecule by putting it within the framework. And metal organic frameworks are ideal for this because you can design the framework structure, as we've just been discussing.
What is the benefit then, say, of keeping them in this rigid state, say, and analysing what does happen to them?
So it gives you real insight into what is the nature of this photoexcited state. Probing those excited states is difficult because many of them are short-lived. They can be less than a nanosecond, and it can react. It can undergo chemical transformations, it can do all kinds of things. You need to understand that process. But also, by putting it within the framework, we can prolong the lifetime of those excited states. We can change the actual properties, in fact. And actually, we can probe them differently. Often, the way that you look at these excited states is by using spectroscopy. They give you lots of information, but it's not quite the same as the detail which you can get from other techniques, such as crystallography. And this is where our work with Diamond comes in. At Diamond, we can get what are called crystal structures of single crystals of our frameworks using the sort of high-energy X-rays that can be generated at the Diamond Synchrotron, which we can't do in our own labs here. What this allows you to do is to actually get detailed information about the precise positions of the atoms within our molecules. And this allows us to actually see what happens to the photoexcited state after it reacts.
Could you give an example then of a particular reaction that you have been looking into at Diamond, say?
A particular case we can incorporate within a framework structure, a particular rhenium complex. Now, rhenium's a pretty unusual metal, and this particular type of rhenium complex has been widely studied and is actually used, it's kind of a classic of photochemistry, and has been used in all kinds of different applications and studied in solution, looked at how it interacts with DNA, it's been used in photovoltaic applications. What we did was we incorporated this basic group within a framework, modified its properties, and were then able to look at how it behaves after photoexcitation.
And what would the next step then be? With a really thorough understanding of this process, say for the rhenium complex and other examples and other reactions as well, what would it then be hoped would be the next step using this information?
In this process, there are carbon monoxide molecules attached to the rhenium centre. And actually, on photoexcitation, there is a short period of time where this carbon monoxide molecule comes away from the metal centre. And there's what's called a vacant site. Normally, and indeed in the studies we've done so far, what happens is that the carbon monoxide goes back on. What we really want to do is to prolong the lifetime of that situation where there's this vacant site on the metal and try to put different things onto it. There are two directions here. One is that you could try to put alkanes onto there. So this is things like methane gas. And try to incorporate it and get a rhenium to methane interaction. And that leads to what's called activation of the alkane and make it react differently in chemical terms. But the one we'd love to do is to try to put xenon onto it, try to make a metal to xenon bond and actually characterize it so we know exactly where this xenon is sitting. The xenon is incredibly unreactive. So actually being able to identify and characterize a bond to xenon, it's almost one of the holy grails of chemistry.
So it would be quite an advancement in kind of fundamental chemistry, really, to try and get this bond.
It's fundamental understanding here. I mean, you know, it gives us a far greater understanding of how these things can behave. It advances science altogether. There is still a beauty in understanding how different atoms interact with each other, because that's the basis of all chemistry.
Professor Neil Champness from the University of Nottingham. Now, that is it for this month's podcast, but we'll be back in March with more news and events from Diamond. In the meantime, if you have any questions about the facility, the research you've heard about in this podcast, or if you simply have any suggestions for what you'd like to hear more about, email podcast@diamond.ac.uk. Thank you very much to Trevor Raymond, Sarah Bucknell, Charles Coquell and Neil Champness. I'm Mira Senthilingam, and thank you for listening.
The Diamond Podcast is brought to you by Diamond Light Source and produced by thenakedscientists.com. There's more information on our website at diamond.ac.uk/podcast.